101, a version 1 podcast.
Welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations about technology and innovation with some of the UK and Ireland's leaders and trailblazers. My name's Peter Gothard, and today I'm joined by Sarah Stevens, co-founder and CTO at Restless, a recruitment service for, well, dare I say, Sarah, older people.
So Restless' mission is actually to help the over 50s get more out of life. And today's over 50s are hugely different to 20 years ago. One of the ways that we're looking into doing that is through providing a jobs platform. So a lot of over 50s, either through necessity, are looking for jobs, or because they want to keep their mind active and to keep physically active. So Restless is providing the jobs platform, guidance in that area, and also a community around that to support them peer-to-peer and from Restless itself. Okay. We're also trying to actively spread the word about age-diverse workforce, something that is actually a society mindset that we're trying to push through these days.
Well, yeah, this is, I guess I was just going to start with this because I actually thought it was close to being not exactly government mandated, but there does seem to be this push at governmental level to keep people in the workforce, partly, I guess, because the population is now aging in this strange top-heavy way where, everyone's retired and doing nothing, and that's the sort of expectation. But, yeah, also, I guess they want the tax money. So we're talking over 50s, and obviously, you know, you're a co-founder and CTO, so this is a technology-led business. Yeah. Many people may argue that technology and the over 50s are not particularly great bedfellows. How are you kind of approaching that one?
Sure. So I would argue that 100%. Our stats are actually saying that roughly around over 65% of our users are using mobile or tablet devices. Hmm. And so we really have to lead with that and think about how we're approaching that from a tech point of view.
So yeah. Do you have an app, or is it web-based, or how are people accessing?
We're solely web-based, although on the community, so we have our own site for the jobs finding and the advice sections. We also have a community platform that we're testing into at the moment. Our initial tests were actually into Facebook, so we have a couple of Facebook groups, okay. And that's something that our demographic really use. Facebook's the biggest population that are using Facebook are in the over 50s, actually.
Yeah, this is why younger people are leaving Facebook, because it's now become the place where their parents will see what they're up to, and they're all on TikTok.
Yeah, so we tried it on there. It's actually got a lot of traction there. So we're currently trying to see if we can provide that on our own platform and move over to a forum-based style to really support our members.
And I suppose forum style is a bit more old school in UX, so it's something they might remember from...
It's a good question. It's something we're actually toying with. We really believe in sort of test and learn. We actually don't know if forum's going to be something that works with this audience, considering that they're used to Facebook. I think that we're seeing that the port actually over from Facebook onto the forums is a little more tricky than we imagined. Because we're small and because we're agile, we might be able to flex that very quickly and turn that around to a more news-fed style that kind of looks a bit more like Facebook and see if we're getting more engagement. But we need to get the metrics and get the learnings from the current way that we're doing in order to drive how that product will change over time.
But as you say, you're small, you're agile, you're checking things as they go and you're changing as need be. And I mean, this maybe leads us into your kind of personal history. I think the place where you've got to working on Restless, a few years ago you were essentially you were a VP at Credit Suisse, you were living in New York. What's your sort of business trajectory been that's taken you from that extreme to now doing something, I guess, more small and altruistic?
Sure, it's an interesting journey, that's for sure. Getting into, I've got a 10-year history in software engineering and being a tech leader. So prior to being at CS, I worked at JobServe and various different software consultancy. A software consultancy that was putting me in financial institutions. And I kind of I needed to do a bit of traveling, so I kind of left and went traveling, and then I came back and worked directly for Credit Suisse. And after a year and a half there, I was kind of thinking about doing an MBA. It's incredibly expensive. Perhaps I don't want to spend all that money. Where could I just take a fraction of that money and try and learn some of those things that I would learn on MBA? And I started a pop-up cocktail service as a side gig. So wow. Something very not technology-led, but very startup-y. And it actually took off. I only thought it was going to last 3 months. It became TripAdvisor's number one nightlife attraction in Southampton.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that says about Southampton, but no, I'm only joking.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, it became very popular. My co-founder and I, it's called Bring and Mix, opened a franchise up in Manchester, and it really gave me the bug for startups. During that time, I got the opportunity to go out to New York, and kind of who can say no to that if they've got the opportunity?
Who indeed?
So I went out there to build a team in the regulatory risk space and deliver a project over there, which I did in the course of about just under two and a half years. And by that time, I kind of figured that I wanted to be back in the UK. It was a good time to move back. And I thought, why not just jump and go back into something that you really got a bug for, and that's the startup world, not cocktails.
No, not this time.
Not this time, but into technology. And I came back various times to meet a few different people, and one of those people was Stuart, my co-founder, and he was he had a great idea. He had a pitch deck, and I really connected with him. He has a personal story which he could tell, but I look at my father's own experiences and how he came out of the army, and he was, despite all the preparation they tried to give him, he was kind of lost. He tried to go back into the workforce and help to support his family, and he was told that he's had too much experience and he wouldn't fit in the culture in these places, and he actually ended up going back into the MOD. He'd tried to do a startup. He got very little support there, and I just think the people in their sort of over 50s are a little bit forgotten. And that's how I connected on the social impact side. But on the business side, you know, it's a growing demographic. It's big. There's lots of opportunity there.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, you used the example of him, you know, trying to do a startup, for example, because I suppose I thought, both from looking at Restless's website and just thinking about it, that it's a sort of recruitment, you know, job listing site of going to work for other people. But I suppose also you can use what you're doing to start to build opportunities to, you know, help older people make their own success from scratch.
Absolutely.
And you know, start with good ideas and maybe help to accelerate those. And, you know, if there's technology involved, help there. Like, what is the sky the limit with this idea? Like, can you just keep scaling the concepts of Restless?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be pushing into different areas to see how we can best serve and help our members, essentially. It's funny that you say about them building their own businesses. A lot of the people that are having issues finding work in the marketplace are turning to starting their own business because they believe in themselves and they actually end up building their own thing. So we can certainly start to support them in terms of guidance and advice in that area. And yeah, who knows where we'll start to end up. We're very much member-led and community-focused. So we're just listening to them and seeing what they need.
Cool. So, I mean, there was a cocktail business, which, you know, was a thing, and that was definitely a factor. So you're in New York, probably living in a great big, you know, glass-fronted apartment building, and it's snowing and it's wonderful, and you've got this great big, you know, top-level job, Credit Suisse. If you look back on that now, and you've founded this you know, this startup as a CTO, as a leader and as a technologist, what do you feel are the kind of similarities and differences of moving from there to here?
So I've actually been thinking about that over the last 6 months, actually. And one of the things, there's several things, and I was trying to whittle it down in my head, do just a few things. I'm sure a lot of people can think about the differences, things like more freedom and lack of process, which sounds great, but for some people it's really uncomfortable for them, because you're just kind of given free rein to, right, just make this happen. Here's what we want to do. Just go off and make that happen, which can be uncomfortable for people that come from a corporate background.
Yeah.
They're used to...
No rules. Being,
yeah, no rules.
No guidelines.
Yeah, no guidelines. No
sandboxes even. It's just everything. Yeah.
Exactly. I think another major thing that I realized was that in corporate life, you have kind of a team to do everything. So you might have an infrastructure team, a BAU team, a testing team, and then there's the dev team. Whereas when you do a startup, it's like you're all of those teams all at once. Yeah. And you kind of have to learn those things. And you might not know everything at depth, and that you have to be okay with that and just saying, you know, we need to just make this work and roll things out. Yeah, not being able to go that deep into things can be frustrating at times. But there are similarities, and you might not think so. You might think, oh, I'll do a startup and I won't have to report to anyone, or I'm kind of my own boss. But I don't think there ever is a case where you don't report to anyone, whether it be your boss at corporate or it be your investors or your customers when you're doing a startup.
Yeah.
You still have that.
Or yourself to an extent.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I guess if you're wearing all the hats, one of the hats is the boss hat or the CEO hat or, you know, whatever, because you think, well, can I justify this? And should I have literally conversation with myself? Because maybe to reestablish those rule bases, which you may have lost and maybe need or want.
Definitely. There's the, it's on you. So you're answering, you're exactly right to yourself as well. Standard things like building a strong team, still the same across corporate or startup. Stakeholder buy-in. Still the same. I still have to, we've got smart people. I still have to convince them that the way that I want to head is the right way to do it.
That's an interesting thing to, because again, I guess it's like whenever you watch movies where people just start with a new idea and everybody's just, that there's always this point where it's like, well, you're either with me or you're not with me. And, you know, there'll be this dramatic moment. But sometimes it's like, well, there must actually be a chipping away process of having to convince people.
Yeah.
Because it's not just going to be the dream is on the table and everybody understands that. And I think it can be, it can get quite rose tinted.
Yeah, totally.
So how did it sort of feel to be in a situation where you were having to sell your own idea to somebody even after maybe you'd hired them? And, you know, how does that feel?
I don't know if it's day to day, but definitely on a weekly basis, I have to perhaps sell my architecture ideas and my vision for how the technology stack. I'm fortunate enough to have a very mixed and diverse technology teams in terms of ideas and the way that they approach things. So even if I'm aligned with one of them, I'm definitely going to have to pitch to the other. And I think it's just finding a reason for them to head that way and to use metrics and show what the end goal is going to be and why it's beneficial to head in the direction that you're planning.
Right. Yeah, you see, I mean, that's probably a really important point. It's actually like you're giving people something to go with, as opposed to just going, I'm the boss, do it my way. Because we've all worked for people like that, you know, and even in small companies. In fact, maybe in small companies it was worse. Because, you know, I worked at a place with 120 employees and it was just like the MD's word is final. And sometimes it was like, well, I've lost the thread of why I'm even here.
Totally. You know? And I just think if you do that, I think you set a really bad precedence for moving forward. It stops people from raising their ideas, which, you know, if you come to an agreement, my direction actually might not be the right way. And I want to hear from my guys. I want to hear from my team around, actually, here's why that might not be right. And I never want to suppress that. And so it's always check and challenge is up for debate with them. And I think it's important to foster that culture.
That sounds really encouraging. It's funny because when I talked about the idea of, you know, having to sell ideas to your employees, the first thing you said was your tech stack. So now I'm wondering what it is about your tech stack that people might be questioning. Is it an interesting or different tech stack?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit different. I have a .NET background and none of our tech stack is currently .NET. We use WordPress actually to get things up and running. We have an approach of very much tactical and strategical. So WordPress has been a very much tactical decision in order, they have a lot of themes and plugins and functionality that you can just buy out of the box and get out there.
Yeah.
It might not be a choice for a lot of people to do a job search in WordPress, but it worked really well for us.
Few backflips.
It's quite tightly coupled. There's a lot of things that possibly people wouldn't choose. But where we've seen strategic components, we've actually have built them in a more scalable manner. So we've gone serverless, microservices. We're actually using Python and Node. So we have a very different style, I guess, of tech stack.
It's quite now though in terms of using existing services and you know, I think we're having earlier maybe a buy versus build
yes.
conversation as well. So it seems like you're more on the buy side.
Yeah, I'd always try to look for something that can come out of the box. It obviously depends on price. Startups very price conscious. Mm. So it's worked quite well with WordPress. We've been able to test something out of the box and know what we actually want, and then go to the marketplace to look for something more scalable. We're actually buying a different solution, replacing our job search now with something a lot better. And we again bought that. We have built our backend services, things like web scrapers, although you can buy things to do that. We actually chose to build those ourselves.
Do you have a sort of key takeaways or almost top tips for people who are moving from either just working in technology on a startup generally, or maybe who are moving from a bigger, more corporate environment into something freer?
Yeah, sure. Yes, I do definitely. I spent some time thinking about this because I thought, what have I actually learned? And it's not until you sit down and write it down that you think, actually, there's loads of things. So I'll try and consolidate that list a little bit. I've learned things from both Restless as a startup and also Bring a Mix. So Bring a Mix, very similar, test and learn. We did a pop-up first and then we actually went in to fill our own venue. Mm. And Restless the same, test and learn. Use those metrics to drive how your product evolves. So one of the things I would definitely say is that accept that whatever decision you make is probably not going to be the right one long term, and it's certainly not going to be perfect. You just have to try and do your best to make sure that it doesn't really screw you over long term. So that's something I had to get used to, rather than think, I need the perfect solution. I need it to be massively scalable and I need it to be all of these singing and dancing things.
And that's stressful as well.
Yes.
If you're putting that pressure on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay to do something that's possibly not the best way right now. One of the huge things that I learned from Stuart, my CEO, is that just because there's a right way of doing it and a proper way of doing it doesn't mean that you have to go down that route. So I'll give an example of that. We have a jobs API, which is essentially just a way that people can send jobs to us. Our clients could send jobs to us in order to display on our website. Now, that is the way we want people to do it because it's very nice and clean and we can process things very quickly. But that is, by the time you've had a conversation with a client, onboarded them, got them set up, got them to pay for whatever dev work they need to do their side, you're talking for maybe even 6 weeks, we heard. Whereas if I write a scraper to go and scrape their jobs and then insert them through our API, you're talking a day turnaround. So yeah, the impact of the business is massive. And so, yes, okay, it's a scraper and it's not the best way to do it, perhaps. But in order to have impact right now, that was the best way to go down.
So you can go back to it later and do something else.
Exactly. We're not big enough to sort of command that people integrate with our APIs yet. Yeah, hopefully we'll get that. Definitely don't overplan. I am a massive Agile fan. I'm not a fan of Agile frameworks and forcing them on people. I think if you stick to Agile Manifesto, then you're on to a winner and find out what works for your team. I was trying to do sort of backlog grooming 2 weeks in advance and estimating all of my tasks 2 weeks in advance. And it really unwound for me. I'd spent ages writing briefs and stories and then
imagine you installing a whiteboard like in your kitchen.
You say that.
God.
Yeah. So I got really caught out with that when it came to actually sprint week and doing the work. It was kind of, oh, actually, we don't want to do that anymore. And, oh, no, I've written all these things about it. I have to let go.
And then so many people would be like, well, because I've put the work into overplanning this, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, right. And that's the wrong choice for the business. It's totally the wrong choice. So I've learned to just... a week ahead of time, just say, right, okay, business, what is it we want to do with this? Do we still want to do this? Mm. And if we do, how do you want it to look? And then often they'll say, actually, there's something else we want to work on that's more important. So our backlog is just huge and of all these tasks that once upon a time we thought about doing, and they just get changed all the time. So yeah, getting used to the not planning, which has been an uncomfortable curve for me, and hiring in corporate, I had a budget, so I just, even if I didn't have the work lined up, I would hire. And I would say, right, well, I've got this budget and I need to use it because I know I'm going to need them in the future at some point on a hire. You just cannot be that way inclined with a startup. And you have to really push it in order to find out. Certainly, I'm not saying that's as you're scaling startup, this is the way to do things, but certainly out of stage, very small stage, you have to try and push until you figure out exactly what hire it is you want to make. I've had a few conversations with recruiters where I've said, I really need a UX person, I really need a test engineer. And then 2 weeks later, I'm actually, I really actually don't. I've engaged that recruiter and I shouldn't have, and I've written a spec and I've wasted my time, and why am I doing that? So I would say look out for indicators, because obviously you've got the lead time of interviewing them, handing in their notice. But if you're feeling a pinch, by the time they come, you'll probably be feeling a lot heavier pinch. Mm. So there's just indicators, like you'll notice if one of your team is bottlenecking, and they're usually really good at processing things, it just means that there's just too much work in that area. And so you probably need to hire in that area, or testing isn't getting done as quickly. So you might need to look at what you can do in that area. I mean, automated tests is really what you should be looking at, but do you need an engineer in order to do those?
Sure.
So yeah, it's finding looking for those red flags and then saying, actually, we do need to hire in that area. And then you'll just shift the bottleneck elsewhere. Yeah. And then have to approach that one.
It's like trying to put one of those plastic covers on a phone and the bubbles.
Yeah. Bump, bump. Okay. Whack-a-mole. It's definitely like that.
Amazing. Just time, really. And I think we've covered this a bit. And also, in a way, I'll be undermining a lot of points you've made, because I wanted to ask kind of what's next and you know, what sort of features or ideas you're rolling out. But now what you probably should say is we're agile, so I don't know, and I'm not overplanning it. But just generally, like, you know, what can we look, if people are interested in using the service as well as the tech behind it, what can we look at as the next step?
We're definitely focused on a few things. So we're looking at the jobs angle to bring more age diverse employers on, to give a wider offering to our members. We really want to push our community in terms of peer-to-peer support from us, so people can really learn and progress on their journey. And also, we have like massively huge content section that there's just so much advice and guidance on there that people can learn from. We're just growing that in terms of not only jobs and employment advice, but also helping around in the money area as well, in the finance sections.
Brilliant. So it's going to be a one-stop shop for everything.
Everything over 50. That's what we're hoping for. That's what we're gunning for.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. You've been listening to the 101 podcast. I have been Peter Gothard. I've been talking to Sarah Stevens, co-founder and CTO of Restless.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.